welcome to another episode of the Hop Nerd Podcast. We are continuing on with our What Now miniseries, and we're asking the question that sounds like this. Don't just tell people what to do. Ask them what they need to be successful in particular. What now? Welcome to another episode of the Hop Nerd Podcast. I am your host, Sam Goodman, the Hop Nerd LLC. Make sure you head over to the website, www.thehopnerd.com, for fundamentals, learning teams, support, and so much more. Send us an email, thehopnerd@gmail.com, and be sure to follow along with us on all things social media at thehopnerd or at Sam Goodman. Welcome to today's episode. Welcome. Hey, you know what? Thanks for being here. It really means a lot that you come and spend a little bit of time with me talking about something that you're probably pretty passionate about, just as passionate about as I am, which is human and organizational performance and beyond. Yeah, all this stuff about putting a bit of a positive dent in the universe, about leaving it a little bit better than how we found it. Whether you've been here for all 367 episodes of the podcast, and this is, I looked it up, it is episode number 367. Mind blown, mind melting. Yeah, crazy, right? Or this is your first time tuning in. Thank you. It absolutely means the world that you come and hang out with us. It means a ton when you tell us about the value that you find in these episodes. The emails, the DMs, bumping into you in person and hearing about how you're putting a lot of these ideas that we talk about here into practice within your organization and how that's working for you, or just hearing those stories about like, hey, you said this and I really needed to hear that day, and it really helped an absolute ton. Yeah, that kind of sort of means the absolute world to us. It really does. I share this a lot, and I always say kind of sort of joking, but I'm not really kind of sort of joking. When you do a lot of this stuff, podcasting and the social media in kind of stuff, that's a part of our modern work worlds, just generally speaking, but also just a part of trying to take these messages of leaving things better than how we found them, putting positive in the universe, taking better care of our people, making work suck less, making safety suck less. Social media, podcasting, the kind of public-facing part of that is a huge part of taking that message farther, right? Spreading this information to people that need it. But back to my, I always say I'm joking, but I'm not really joking. Social media and podcasts and all that kind of stuff, make-believe land, highly valuable in a lot of ways, highly soul-crushing in a lot of ways as well. The joke is, I always say, like, I'm screaming into the void, right? So every time that we hear that feedback, it makes my day. It makes my day. So thank you for that. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all the likes, the shares, the subscribes. If you haven't rated the podcast, go down there and give us a 5-star review. If you've read the books, you like the books, you love the books, you got to have more of the books, go leave us a 5-star review. All that stuff helps that message go just a bit farther. Other things to tell you about, make sure that you check out Starting Points, www.thehopnerd.com/SP, as in Starting Points. You can get our original Operationally Curious card decks, learning journals, and inquire about licensing options. If you're into licensing, you can join the list that is growing almost daily of organizations that are licensing these cards so they can customize them in their own branding with their logos, really baking them into their organizations as an easy way to do pre-event operational learning, which is pretty stinking sick. Yeah, we're all looking for easy ways to do pre-event operational learning. And Starting Points helps with that an absolute ton. You know, I was having this conversation the other day, and it led me to scribble out this little bit of a quote on a post-it note that's sitting here on my desk that has to do with pre-event learning and learning in general, but I was talking about it in a pre-event sense, but you could just broadly call this learning and improvement. And the conversation that I was having is that a lot of times we think about this pre-event learning stuff as like a nice to have. Well, wouldn't that be lovely? Wouldn't that just be great if we could? But we don't really have to have that pre-event learning. We've been doing just fine. I mean, not great. We did kill Bob last week. I didn't mean to go too dark on you there, but you get my point. The whole quote is that learning and improvement, it's not a nice to have. It's not just a, hey, this is kind of sort of cool. It's not just about creating operational excellence and safety within our organizations. Heck, it's not even just about creating innovation in our organizations. Pre-event operational learning, it is a vital part of our survival. Yeah, and you can put that in the traditional occupational safety and health sense of that. Of like, yeah, it's vital to the survival of our folks that are entrusted to our care, our folks on the front lines of our organizations. But even in a really broad organizational sense, if we're not learning, improving, and innovating, our organizations will die. They will. So to think that operational learning, this especially in this pre-event sense, is just like, hey, yeah, if we ever get to it, it'd be great to learn before things go wrong. It'd be great to understand that story of normal work, but not in today's work worlds. Yeah, not in today's work worlds. I've been spending a bit of time in tech, and it's really got me like pondering on this idea of innovating or dying. And I think many of our organizations, if we're not innovating, we are dying a very slow and painful death. Yeah, that sounds doom and gloom. The great news with all that is it's not all that stinking hard to do pre-event operational learning. We hype it up like it's an insane thing that we just can't do. And what I almost always find, back to some of our what now conversations throughout this mini-series, is that when we say, oh, we can't do that, I don't know where to start, it's too hard, it's this, it's that, it's, oh God, there's a million and one excuses. And what we're really saying is we just don't actually value it. Yeah, because if we valued it, it's not all that hard to make happen. It needs a little bit of time and resources. You got to clear up some calendars. You got to make it possible for people to actually go out and do this kind of stuff. Yeah, you know, you don't have to buy them a fancy pants card deck or license a card deck. That makes it a little bit easier, lowers that barrier to entry. But you do have to actually make it possible for it to happen. So when we just, what we're really saying is like, we just don't want to free up time and resources for that because we don't see that as valuable. I mean, and that's fine. Nobody's going to judge you for that. Well, maybe. But don't say we really want it. And we just can't get it. Well, do you actually pull people off the line to learn from them? No. Do you actually free up time of your leaders to go out to the line and learn with them? Well, no. Well, there's your answer. Yeah. So that's a big, long, rambly rant about a quote that was sitting here on my desk that I was kind of peeking at here as we were talking about starting points. But yeah, if you're looking for a pretty easy, pretty stinking easy way to get started with pre-event operational learning, because, you know, that kind of little rant that I was going on there a little bit, that's not all. I think a lot of organizations are actually just unsure of where to start. And I know that because I spend time with lots of folks in workshops talking about pre-event operational learning. And when you say, hey, like, this isn't like some huge honking deal here. Like, let me encourage you to do this. Go out to the pointy end of something. Just pick something, even if you're not sure where you want to go learn, and find the person that works with that something. They're probably there somewhere, and walk up to them and say something that sounds kind of sort of like this. Hey, that thing, will you teach me about how that thing works? Guess what you're doing? You're pre-event operational learning. You got to have time. You got to have space. You got to have the ability to actually do that. That stuff is absolutely vital because we're busy and all of those other things that we mentioned a lot in the little rant there. But it's not more complicated than that. And so if you are looking for a tool, if you are looking for something that might make that a bit easier, you freed up that time, you freed up that space, you've given folks that encouragement. As we say in Aren't You Curious, the Operationally Curious Leader, my latest book, if you've made it make sense and you've made it possible, and now you're looking to give leaders that little something that just kind of makes it that much easier, I don't know what question to ask. I get a little shy. There you go. TheHopNerd.com/SP. Other than that, I'm bouncing around all over the place, all over the map, doing my thing. If you need someone like me to come out and do the kind of thing that I do in your organization, I would love to come out and do my thing with your thing. Yeah, we can come out and do that in your organization. Everything from hop fundamentals to learning teams, operational learning, deep dives. You know, the whole thing here that I specialize in is similar to our miniseries here, answering this question of what now? The principles are great. Like them, love them, got to have more of them, or at least got to have them. But what now? What does that mean in real life? That's exactly what I spend my days doing. Again, from workshops to keynotes to rolling up my sleeves, down in the muck, down in the mud, down in the trenches, over in that confined space with you, talking about human and organizational performance and how this works here in your organization. If that's what you're looking for, thehopnerd@gmail.com or visit www.thehopnerd.com. And while you're over there, you can check out all the free resources on the website, the downloadable videos, all the cool merch. You can listen to this podcast, or you can read/listen, because this is a blogcast. Yeah, you know I've got to get it in there. It only took 11 minutes, roughly 11 minutes, for us to get the party horn in today. So I think we've checked all those boxes. Party horn was the last one on my list that I need to get in. So let's jump into today's episode. Well, we are continuing on with our What Now miniseries today. We are on that kind of second tenet idea, principle, better assumption of safety differently. The one that sounds like, instead of just telling people what to do, ask them what they need. Yeah, so we're going to unpack some of that idea, and we're also going to tackle about four or five ideas for actions that you can pursue within your organization. Pretty neat stuff. Yeah, I like it. I love it. You've been reaching out saying that you like it and you love it, and you got to have more of it. So here's more of it. We're going to continue on with this series. We've got one more kind of key idea of safety differently that we're going to unpack. Then we're going to move into some select ideas from my book, 10 Ideas to Make Safety Suck Less, available on Amazon, along with Aren't You Curious, the Operationally Curious Leader, the original Safety Sucks and Safety Sucks the Manifesto. All those things are available over there, along with the website, all easy peasy, lemon squeezy. Really easy to find them if you're in the market for a new book. And I understand if you're not, I understand, because I'm sitting here staring at a pile of books that are just screaming at me, read me. And I haven't quite got there either. I have made myself a solemn vow to not purchase another book. I've got about 47 of them in the saved for later bucket over on my Amazon. I've just not quite pulled the trigger because I've made myself a promise. I'm going to read those books before I buy any more. Yeah, but before we jump into the main meat and potatoes of today's episode, you know what time it is. If you've been listening to these, it's time for our disclaimers. I don't know you. Yeah, and I don't know your organization, at least not in that sense of deep, meaningful understanding about your organization, you, your people, the challenges that your organization faces. So who the heck am I to tell you what to do? And who the heck is anybody else to tell you what to do? Unless they have gained that deep and meaningful understanding of the context in which your organization operates. If I said, hey, you go do this, it's what's best for you, I would be lying, and I don't make a practice of lying. And anybody else out there that would walk up to you and say, hey, I don't know you or much about your business, but I've got a proven, patented, trademarked, licensable, I've got this thing, 5 easy steps, and then, you know what, we can make zero work for you. Yeah, so you can keep zero and eat your pie, too. Yeah, the only thing you got to do, buddy, is send me $47,000, and that's snake oil. Don't fall for that. Yep, I don't know you. I don't know your organization. We can speak in broad terms, and that's what we'll do on this podcast, and that's what we've been doing on this What Now podcast. They're just ideas. If it sounds like it might be something that's of value to you, take it, try it, experiment with it, tweak it, tune it. Yeah, start small, experiment, see what happens. Yeah, do that kind of stuff. Because guess who knows your organization? You do. You do. Your people do. Lean into that operational information that exists within your organization. If you're not sure if this thing will work, go out and ask people, especially the people if it's something that you expect them to use it. Yeah, do those things. Next up, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Not to go on another side rant during our very, very, very clear and concise disclaimer here. But it's some of the reason why I define human and organizational performance the way that I do. I think of human and organizational performance as a collection of better ideas, beliefs, and assumptions from diverse and varying sources that we apply through the lens of a core set of principles. Those five main hot principles. I really like that definition for a couple reasons. And one of them being is that it doesn't slam the door on all the great things that we've done. It doesn't say, well, you have to have all of this and none of that, because that's kind of crap. Well, yeah. And it doesn't shut the door on the future. When we learn new stuff, I don't want to say, no, nothing new, please. We've already got this. It's a buffet. As I was having this conversation with my amazing friend, Becky Ray, on, I think, what was our last episode? I don't know. We've been pumping out a lot of these. We've been throwing these out as soon as they come out. It's a buffet. Take what will work for you. But definitely don't throw out the good stuff that's already working well for you, even if it's something that we might call traditional safety. Yeah, don't do that. Don't throw out the baby with the bathwater, because, again, who am I? If I say something's crap, I really think it's crap. Yeah, I promise. I won't lie to you. And a lot of people like me and beyond might tell you that, hey, that's probably crap. And your peers might tell you, hey, that's probably crap. And you're sitting here looking at it going, but man, it's kicking butt for us. Why would you stop doing that thing? Yeah, now it's got to actually be kicking butt. Meaning that you can't just think that it kicks butt because you really like it. And if it wasn't for those pesky people, if they just used it better, then it would. No. If you want to know, again, go ask. And I'm sure that I'm leaving something out of the disclaimer here that I normally put in here. But you get the point. You get the point. Putting this disclaimer in these episodes allows us to have a conversation without, at least without as much fear from people like me, thinking that people are going to take this and say, well, Sam just gave me an easy peasy checklist. You just follow the checklist and human and organizational performance excellence is ours. Yeah, it just doesn't work that way. So with the disclaimer out of the way, let's get into the real deal conversation of, instead of just telling people what to do, ask them what they need. That sounds super simple. It sounds super obvious. But if you really think about it, in our organizations, it's really the exact opposite of how we tend to approach things. And what I mean by that is, how often are we in the tell me what you need mode versus I'm going to tell you what to do mode? Almost always, we're in I'm here to tell you what to do. I've heard my buddy Clive Lloyd, the amazing Clive Lloyd, talk about safety walks in particular. And I love this conversation around safety walks, because if I think about what a safety walk is, truly, I should be going out looking for the presence of safety. I should be going out and looking for this sometimes near invisible act, these near invisible, if not completely invisible, adaptations that people take in real time, navigating their way through the work world that surrounds them. This creation of safety on the fly, right? Yeah, that stuff. These kind of constant non-events because people are figuring it out and constantly adapting and plugging holes and taping this and that thing. I should actually be going out looking for the creation of safety. But that's not what we mean in our organizations when we say, hey, leaders, you've got to do 5 safety walks a week. What we actually mean, as Clive puts it, is we're directing our folks to go on unsafety walks, meaning that we're expecting our leaders to go out and find unsafety and then tell people what to do with said unsafety. And we tend to really prop that up with a form or a checklist or according to how dated the tech is in your organization, maybe still a Scantron sheet. You guys remember the Scantron sheets? Yeah, handy dandy, easy peasy, trend your behavior-based observations fast. Yeah, those things. But we're going out and we're saying, hey, put on gloves. Okay, thanks. Hey, You've only got 17 tags on this barrier tape. I want you to have 19. Do it. Yeah, we're going out looking for unsafety and then telling people what to do. If I wanted to spin that on its head around, to me, again, what a true safety walk would be, I want to go out and understand why work is normally successful, why it's normally safe, and how you make that happen. And the things that are getting in your way of making those things happen. And instead of telling you what to do, but I get, man, I write you. Instead of doing that, I want to be like, okay, you normally get this right. How can we make it? How can we make it, proper English here, more likely for it to go right, or make it go right more often? What do you need to be successful? Which I think is the important tagline on the end of our little idea of from safety differently here. Don't just tell people what to do. Ask them what they need to be successful. What do they need to create safe and stable work? Again, it sounds all super duper simple, super duper easy. Oh, we already do that. We tell people to let us know. Just let us know if you just need anything at all there, bud. You just let us know and we'll swoop in and we got it. You just let us know. And then we walk out into the field and say, hey, don't do that. Hey, do this. Hey, here's a new rule. Hey, we didn't like what you did last week, so we drafted, you know, this 14 tenant golden rules thing, and we'll fire if you don't follow that. So do that. Oh, yeah. And then, you know, over here, make sure you do that. Do this. And we never quite get to the asking people what they actually need part of this. Follow that procedure. Wear this PPE. Do that. Don't do this. Do that on Thursday. Don't do it on Wednesday. But on Friday, it's dealer's choice. You pick, and then we'll judge you after the fact. We assume that we know what's best. And really what we're doing is we're treating our employees like children. I mean, really and truly, right? We're walking around going, hey, I'm here to protect you from yourself. And I don't really need your input on what you need. I'm just going to tell you what to do because I know best. It doesn't work out so well for us. It's definitely not growing any relationships with those folks nearest to the work. It's definitely not encouraging any open dialogue around what that looks like, the operational reality that exists nearest to the work. So what happens when we just tell people what to do? Well, we ignore the vast amount of expertise, this deep well of knowledge and know-how that lives inside of the folks that are actually doing the work. Yeah, we trigger pushback. When you tell me what to do, that's you doing stuff to me, right? We talk a lot around these parts about doing stuff to people versus doing stuff for people versus doing stuff with people. We talk a lot about that in 10 ideas to make safety suck less, if you want to unpack some of these things just a little bit deeper. When you try to do stuff to me, and that's what's happening here, let's make no bones about it. When you come out and you tell me what to do, you are doing stuff to me. And in fact, you're doing it with little, if any, input from me. And whether I like it or not, because you think it's what's best for me, what do I do? What do you do? What do we as people normally do? Instant pushback. In fact, I am going to do exactly the opposite of what you are telling me to do, even if there's an or else, because now that or else that you threw on there just made me realize that, in fact, that assumption I made about you being an asshole, you actually are an asshole. 110% validated at this point. So with all of that said, I'm just going to do the exact opposite, even if I agree with what you're saying, because I want to prove to you that you are an asshole. Yeah. Yeah, play dumb games, win dumb prizes. We've been playing dumb games for a very, very long time. Pushback, I'm going to move in the opposite direction. But even worse yet, when we go out in this I'm here to tell you what to do mode because I know what's best for you mode, I'm here to protect you from yourself mode, we completely miss the story of normal work. We completely miss the barriers, the challenges, the goal conflicts that people face. We completely miss the fact that that procedure hasn't been updated since 1979. We completely miss the fact that our tools are held together with duct tape. We completely miss the fact that while we're over here trying to turn this box green for you, because damn it, it's got to be green or else, Bob's about to fall off that piece of equipment and die. We completely miss the fact that we might be pouring too much pressure onto our people and into the system, and it is pushing it well outside of its margin. It's just, we miss all of those things. And then we'll follow up the telling you what to do with, hey, thanks for that. Now you be careful out there. Yeah, you have to laugh at it, or you would cry a little bit. Just follow the rule. It'll magically fix all of those underlying issues that we just talked about. But what happens when we do the opposite? What happens when we say something like, what do you need? It changes the entire dynamic. It instantly shows respect for that person, for their expertise. It invites dialogue and collaboration. It helps us get closer to that story of normal work. It encourages folks, as we've said a bunch of times about a lot of this stuff, to tell us, for people to tell us what they need to tell us rather than just telling us what they think we want to hear. We get to hear the story of problems. We get to hear the story of success despite problems. We get to hear the story of resource gaps. We get to hear the story of safety going right and safety going wrong and operational efficiency going right and it going wrong and things working effectively and things working not so effectively. It shifts the focus from controlling people to enabling success. That's the story. That's the conversation. That's the dialogue that we need to hear. That's the dialogue that's mission critical to our organizations. Maybe back to that ranty little quote that I threw out there from my little post-it note here. Yeah, you can hear my post-it notes. Yeah, sitting here. That this isn't just about like a nice-to-have thing. It's not just nice to hear that story. It's required. If our goal is to not only survive, but thrive at some point. And that's really what this little scribbly mess of post-it note goes on to say, is that learning and improvement, hearing the story of normal, everyday, successful work, it's not just about thriving. At first, and at a base level, it's about surviving. Okay, so I think we probably agree. I don't want to kind of beat a dead horse here, but we agree that asking is better than telling. We know that just generally as people, safety and beyond. Duh, right? Asking is better than telling. Brilliant. But what now? How do we actually put that into practice? Let's jump into some actions for today's episode. Are you looking for a handy dandy, easy peasy, lemon squeezy kind of way to get conversations flowing around operational reality within your organization? These conversations around work is done versus work is imagined, pain points, problems, even best practices, the good stuff, the great stuff. Well, Starting Points is exactly what you're looking for. Starting Points, the original operationally curious card deck packed full of a ton of learning-focused, operationally curious icebreaker questions to get those conversations flowing, helping your organization to effectively learn, improve, and innovate. Head over to thehopnerd.com/SP to download our free sample deck, to purchase the original card decks and learning journals, or to inquire about licensing options so that you can customize Starting Points with your brand, your logo, and your questions for your specific organization's needs. Again, that's thehopnerd.com/SP. Back to the show. So action number one, what now? Action-oriented mini-series about human and organizational performance. I like this. I've seen this done in a couple organizations now, and I really, really think this one's valuable. And again, to them, it's been a huge breath of fresh air and produced a lot of really, 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 really interesting things. And it involves standing audits on their head a bit. Audits in our organizations a lot of times have been corporate is coming. They're here to see what we are doing wrong. They're going to make a long list of how we're freaking terrible. And then in a closeout meeting, your lovely safety professional, ding, 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 me. I'm going to sit there and argue with them and tell them how they're all stupid and how they're misapplying regulation here and they're misinterpreting procedure here. And by the time I'm done beating them up, I'm going to get about half of those thrown off because we can only get so many on that number or so many on that audit report or, you know, this whole site gets in trouble. And I'm going to protect my folks. I'm going to protect the site because half of those are freaking dumb. Yeah, we're going to get a bunch of that tossed off that report before it goes out final. And then it's going to go to the executives. And then they're going to yell at us anyways because anything more than zero on an audit is like the worst thing ever, right? Yeah, of course. We were 99% safe. Well, we only expect excellence with safety or we're going to make you do 17 stand-ups. Yeah, that kind of thing. You know that old song and dance. Lazy leadership. That's what that's called, in case you don't know. Lazy leadership. And there we go. That's kind of an audit. It's painful. It sucks. It's terrible. Yeah. I've seen a lot of organizations not get rid of their audits. They've completely gutted what their traditional audits look like, right, when you think about what we just described, and actually viewed it as more of a, like a diagnostic tool. Like, hey, this is actually pretty good. When we actually know where we're at, 99 is pretty stinking good. Let's find opportunities for more learning and actual improvement and how we can, what audit should be. Of course they do that. But they have this thing that they call what do you need audits? Yeah, a little on the nose, but I like it. Think of it as resourcing assessments. Yeah, well, what do you need audits? They have this thing that's not this traditional compliance checklist thing. Their audit team, about half the time, instead of just going out and saying, hey, here's all the gaping holes, and you guys must be stupid if you don't know how to do this stuff. Even though we're never here, I've got a book that tells me how you should be doing this and you know, all that stuff. About half the time, they're going out asking a question, sounds like, hey, what do you need to be successful? Looking at this task or this process, what resource, tools, information, training, support do you need that you're not getting? That's a pretty interesting question to answer. And you can probably sit here and come up with about 20 on your own for your own organization's what do you need audit, even down to things like, hey, are you, you know, our free issue thing in the way, are you getting all the PPE that you need? Is it easily available? Is it actually available? Does it fit well? I mean, just even basic safety stuff. It's surprising to discover where those resourcing, what do you need kind of holes actually exist within our organizations when you actually go out and stop telling people what to do and you ask them what they need. Again, I've seen several organizations take this and formalize this into a bit of a formal process of what do you need. And it becomes really this presence of positives things, right? We talk about better measures, better indicators of performance. Safety, success shouldn't just be the absence of negative events within our organizations, right? It should be the presence of positives. This is a great way to tap into those positives. This is a great way to do pre-event operational learning. This is a great way to discover some of those gaps and holes. And it all starts with a better question that sounds like, hey, what do you need to be successful? Yeah, just a formalized version of that. I've always thought that that is pretty stinking cool. Action number two. Make sure that you're co-designing resources, not just writing safety rules, please, or just rules in general. Take safety out of that. I've been trying to purge that word. I don't know that that's good or bad, but so much of what we talk about is not safety specific, and I don't want to keep boxing it into this little safety box. So if you hear me slip up on that, just kind of mentally go and kind of strike that out of your head, unless it is very safety specific, I guess. But when we're thinking about developing or updating procedures or standards or guidelines, when we're thinking about updating, you know, the supplies that we need to do the said thing, the end user of that's your BFF. It should be your BFF because you're not writing that crap for you. You're not writing that crap for the vice president of operations. They're never going to freaking use that thing. You're writing it for that person that's working with said thing. Yeah. Frame the output of this as what resources do you need to succeed? Ask questions that sound like what information would be most helpful to you in this specific situation. How can we present this information so it's not just a cluttered mess? Like, can't we strip out all the stuff that's just fluff that me and you as maybe safety folks, or I consider myself a recovering safety professional at this point, all that fluff that we feel the need to put in to try to make ourselves look really smart on the organization. Yeah, you know, we got to write everything like it's a freaking summons. Yeah, like, whereas, yeah, like all the big, like, all caps whereases, like, just the illegal docs. Yeah, humans don't read that crap, just so you know. Can we take all that out? What's the actual information that you need? Clear, concise. You're the one using it. You tell me. Something that sounds like, how can we present it so it's actually clear and useful when you're doing the job, not just like forcing you to tick some box there. Make all of this stuff a collaborative design process. Action number three, think about a barrier removal request system. Yeah, this thing's in my way. How the heck do we get rid of it? Yeah, we often know exactly what's going to get in our way, right? Again, I've seen an organization use this. They're all high-techy, and they make it all high-tech, and people can do this from their palms. Yeah. You can probably make that work however you want to in your organization. But people know what they need to succeed, usually, and they tend to know what's getting in their way of that success. This is a feedback loop. Create a simple, accessible something. It could be something as simple as a dedicated email inbox that somebody actually reads, like somebody's actually going to be on the other side of it. It could be that handy-dandy app that your organization uses or some type of form. Or, you know, as much as we knock them, you know, and I hate to say it, sometimes even a physical suggestion box, maybe, based on the size and scope of your operations, obviously. But it's a spot where people can, like, actively flag the barriers that they face with specific work. They can say, hey, this thing sucks. It's not working for us. We're having to do 14 workarounds. Yeah, and can we work on this? What organizational issues are we facing with this process? What support are you not getting that you really need? Here's another channel for you to share that so we can help remedy that barrier to success. Action number four. And this will tickle the fancy of all my HR buddies out there who just freaking love performance reviews and performance review processes. And I know they're all going, we don't love it. They make us do it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Some of you love it. Some of you probably feel more like we do. Why the heck are we making it? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But think about flipping that on its head even, right? And think about a reverse performance review for levels of support and resourcing and the things that people need to be successful within their organizations, right? Flip the script on those performance reviews. Instead of just having managers evaluate workers on compliance and meeting goals and turning checkboxes green, what if our employees actually evaluated the level of support that they receive? That's a great way to answer some of that question of what do you need to be successful? Are we getting you what you need to be successful? You know, asking these questions that focus on what they need from the organization. What support do you need from me as a leader, me as a supervisor? What tooling, what physical resources do you need? What constraints or conflicting goals do you face with budget and time and on and on and on and on? What organizational issues are making it hard to be successful within this organization? Again, another mechanism to capture that feedback. Yeah, so that's not all that hard. You can run that right in line with your normal performance review processes. You've already got a something there. I know you got a something there because everybody's got a something there. What's so hard about breaking those two things, taking that one thing and turn it into two things? Yeah, it's pretty stinking easy, actually. I've seen multiple organizations I work with do something like this or similar to this, and I'm painting this with a broad brush. You got to get specific with these things. You got to figure out how this would work for your organization. But a reverse performance review. We know that the context, the condition, all these things that our employees face, if we're enabling them for success, that plays a huge, massive stinking deal in the operational outcomes that we see. So it seems like we would be interested in if we are actually living up to providing them what they need to be successful. Whether you call that a reverse performance review or something fancier than that, it's just a pretty stinking cool idea that I've seen work on multiple occasions. Now, last one. Action number 5555555555. You've heard my story on pre-job briefs. And if you've not, you can find it somewhere back in the podcast, or I'll probably tell it to you when I see you in a workshop somewhere. But it was a story of this organization that I worked internal to that had a pre-job brief process that's probably pretty typical to the way that most pre-job brief processes function in most normal organizations, meaning that every time something went wrong, we added a new checkbox to the pre-job brief, and eventually over the years, because we thought checking a box meant that you talked about it, and if you talked about it, magically nothing bad can happen. Yeah, and then if you didn't check every box, and then God forbid you pick up a ladder and then something happens with the ladder, then you're fired because you should have talked about ladders. Even though all your work was planned to happen without a ladder, you should have stopped and rebriefed. Yeah, the basic stuff. So we had this big, long, wacky form that was about 8 pages long. Yeah, and most of it just checkboxes, but not just checkboxes. It got worse than that. You know what? I forgot to put it in the beginning. Story time. How could I forget the story time sound effect? And I'm definitely too lazy to go back and redo that for sure. Error is normal. But we've recovered. We have recovered. And we're at this point in our story of having a sucky pre-job brief process. And this story probably sounds extremely familiar to you. From above in the organization, if you looked at this, you'd go, aha, we have a great process. Look at this box. It is green. We count these. We measure these. We have people read them and subjectively say after the fact that this one had great penmanship, and this one appeared to have checked all the boxes, and it was in crisp, clean, neat condition. So that would be something that we'd call a quality pre-job brief. So we'd bucket these into quality and not so quality pre-job briefs. And based on the number of work orders we were doing within the organization, we had estimates on how many should be done. And guess what? That box was always green. And if you looked at it from above, it looked like it was working well. Now, the closer you got to work, people that actually use them, guess what they would tell you? They would tell you things that sound like, we wrecked out one of them fancy photocopiers, and then we pre-filled them out with everything except for the date, basically, and maybe some signatures, but sometimes we would even leave the signatures on there. You know, nobody looked to see if Bob was actually here that day or if he was off on PTO. So, we had everything pretty much except for the date. So what we would do is we'd photocopy a big stack of those, and then we'd put a new date on it every day, and then the supervisor squirrel that away at their desk. And, we'd get that stupid 8-page form out of the way, and we'd have the real deal conversation. Then we'd go to work. And it would sound something like, some of my favorite input from some of this learning nearest to this work. What do you think, bro? We don't talk to each other. Like, we don't need a stupid form to talk about each other. Yeah, maybe they're talking about me, but we don't need a stupid form to talk to each other. Like, we are talking. Trust me. The problem is that we sit in this room, you make us fill out that form like you think it's some magical something. And then as soon as we walk out of those doors, everything changes, because that's where real work happens, is out there. And if we actually stopped and rebriefed, like the rules say, every time that something changes, we would be doing nothing but pre-job briefs, because things change every 5 freaking minutes. All fair points. points. Yeah. So hearing all this and sharing the story throughout the organization of our really garbage pre-job brief, which most of us knew, maybe those up higher in the organization know so much or didn't want to accept so much. But actually hearing this story, it was aha, this sucks. Okay, gotcha. Okay, now that makes sense. Gotcha. This organization didn't want to part ways with a pre-job brief form. It was just one of the ground rules that they laid around innovation with this. And so they said something like this: hey, folks, nearest to the work, build us something. Well, really, build you something. Build something that is useful to you, something that you would actually use, something that you are proud of. There are only 2 rules. We want a form, and it can't suck. That was it. Go get creative. Yeah. So they designed this, and long gone the 8 pages, all that stuff. There were a few really critical questions that sounded a lot more like that start when safe thing that we talk about. You know, watch the stuff that'll kill us. You know, the stuff that not only kill us, but it'll hurt the entire time that it's killing us. How do we make sure that we don't die? Are those controls, is that strategy enough? How do we verify those controls? Those kind of basic questions. But another thing that they built into this, which was something that was super handy to them, was this resourcing-focused pre-task briefing. It was part of what they put on the back of their little form. You know, their form on the front with these questions was maybe half a page. And then they put this little thing on the back of it that asks questions that sounds like, what do we need to be successful with this job as far as a resourcing thing? Like, of course, they discuss the stuff that kills us and how we don't die and all those basic things first, because that's the first thing on their mind, promise. Yeah, but looking at the job ahead, what resources, what information do we need? Do we need any job-specific PPE? Don't put something on here about, oh, remember to wear your gloves and your hard hat. Oh, remember your gloves and your hard hat, person that basically sleeps in your gloves and hard hat. Yeah, you don't need to say that stuff because they basically sleep in their gloves and hard hats, just like we do. If you've ever lived on a site, that's just how that goes. We don't need the reminder. But what I do want to talk there about with resourcing is there any specialty PPE that we don't normally use that we need to be using? Do we have the training, the knowledge, the understanding of how to use that stuff effectively? If not, who does? Who can come show us how to use that stuff? They built in this resourcing thing into those pre-task briefings. So I share this when I share the story. There's a lot of conversation around pre-job briefs and if they work and how effective those things are. And maybe that more traditional sense. But I got to say, I think if we're talking about the stuff that kills us and we're talking about controls and safeguards that keeps that stuff from killing us and the verification of those controls and safeguards, make sure that they're not just there, but functional, that they are greater than, you know, the energy source on the other side of it, maybe to go down that energy-based model a little bit. And then if we're talking about, do we actually have the resources that we need to do this? And if not, how do we get them? There's a lot to be said about the effectiveness of pre-task planning. I didn't say just pre-task safety tick box, hey, this makes management happy, air quotes, planning. I said actual pre-task planning. A big part of pre-task planning is resources. You've already got the process. It's there. I promise you probably got something that sounds like that. Work with those folks nearest to that work to design something that maybe looks like that. Ask them if that would be something that would be helpful to them. Okay, there we go. Let's do a little bit of a recap. Instead of telling people just what to do, you need to go out and ask them what they need. Of course, we know as people, asking goes way farther than telling. And in fact, if you try to just do stuff to me, and that's what telling is, if you try to do crap to me with little to no input from me, and whether I like it or not, even if you're doing it to me because you think it's what's best for me, you really think you know what's best for me, nothing good's going to come out of that. In fact, I'm going to push back, I'm going to kick, and I'm going to scream, and in a lot of times, I'm going to do exactly the opposite, just to prove to you that you're a bit of an asshat, because you are. You're kind of acting like one, at the very least, at that point, because you can't do that to people. It doesn't work that way. We've got to do things with people. Asking people what they need to be successful is doing things with people. Asking people what they need. Asking people what they need to be successful in particular opens up the doorway to learning more about normal work, normal, everyday, usually successful work, and all the challenges and problems, the warts and all, that come along with normal, everyday, usually successful work. In action number one, we talked about flipping audits on their head and maybe not trashing your normal audit process. There's probably some value there, especially if we are thinking about audits through our new view hop lens, not viewing them as a way to go out and find things that are wrong and expect 100% compliance always or else and blaming and shaming people, but actually using them in a much more positive fashion to discover learning opportunities and celebrating those opportunities when we find things that, hey, this isn't working right. And guess what? Because of this audit, we pulled together a learning team and we figured out how to make it work. All that stuff. Using those things in a much, much better fashion than, hey, 100% compliance or else. Yeah. Not throwing those away, but maybe the same similar stood on its head kind of process going a bit of the other direction. Instead of just asking, hey, what are you doing for us? Maybe asking, hey, what are we doing for you? This what do you need audit idea. Action number two, making sure that you're actually co-designing resourcing with the folks that need said resourcing, making sure that you're co-designing process and procedures and support systems with the folks that actually have to use them. This is still in that same vein of not doing crap to people. It is doing things with people. Guess who knows what they need to be successful? Ding, ding, ding. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. You guessed it. The folks nearest to the work. Action number 3, building in a feedback loop for barrier removal. Like, hey, I've got this problem. Help me get rid of it. Help me make this problem less of a problem. Hey, this thing gives me a migraine and it's really wonky and wacky to get anything done with this. I feel like half of my day is spent battling that instead of actually doing this work. Yeah. And this feedback loop there, right? Think about what that looks like, whether that's in your app driven something, if that works well for you, even all the way down. If it's, we're talking mom and pop shops here or single location. Hey, we've got 20 people, the box in the corner that says, hey, what sucks? We're here to help you get rid of it. That might just work for you, but it's a great way to discover where some of those barriers exist. Quick pause. Want to drive meaningful change, improvement, and innovation within your organization? The Hot Nerd LLC can help. Head over to www.thehotnerd.com to book an initial consult, to request a quote, to get in touch, or explore the services that we provide. Services like engaging workshops on human and organizational performance and safety differently, engaging workshops on learning teams, operational learning, curiosity, and improvement. We also offer services such as strategy and planning support and post-event learning reviews, keynotes, public events, and more, all built on real-world experience, in the muck, in the mud, in the trenches kind of experience that we've gained doing this in real life, working internal to organizations, helping companies that we work with answer the question that sounds like, hey, this is great and all, but what now? How does this actually work? Yep, that's what I specialize in. You can learn more at thehotnerd.com or get in touch at thehotnerd@gmail.com. The Hot Nerd LLC can help you actually bring hot to life. Action number 4. Try out some reverse performance reviews. We're all about saying, hey, what are you doing for the success of our organization? What are you doing to make sure that you're living up to our expectations? But are we living up to their expectations? Are we actually giving them what they need? It feels like those things should at least be equally weighted. I mean, that just feels fair to me. It shouldn't just be, hey, I'm the cog in the big machine, and am I meeting those performance metrics? It should be, hey, I'm not just the cog in the machine. There's a whole bunch of crap around here that's supposed to be helping me be the best person in this organization that I can be to get things way more right than I ever get them wrong. Those things feel like they should at least be equal, is what I'm saying here. We know that success and successful operational outcomes, it has a lot more to do with all of this stuff, more than it has to do with just me and me living up to expectations. So are we doing that? Are we thinking about that? I think it's something you might should try. I've seen a lot of organizations starting to do this now. Performance reviews, but reverse performance reviews. Again, you've already probably got a performance review mechanism. There you go. There's the other side of it. And action number 5, we just talked about this one with our story of the pre-job brief and this process of gutting the really shitty pre-job brief process and the folks nearest to the work building something that worked well for them. And a part of what they put in there was this pre-work planning thing that had to do with resources. Yeah, pre-work planning is usually pretty good. Yeah, build a plan, work the plan, know where we need to chuck the plan, know where we need to adapt the plan. Yeah, sure. But having a really solid, well-thought-out plan tends to help us a bit. And a big part of any pre-work plan is resourcing. Now, the cool part that I didn't share with you during our little story part that I'll tag in here is that it also became another touch point for us to see where, hey, maybe we're not getting them the support that they need because they could have really used this and they didn't have it. Yeah, it's another opportunity, a far more valuable data point than, hey, another way wrong. Yeah, it's pretty stinking cool. So there you go. There you go. There's a bit of an exploration for our What Now miniseries, an action-oriented miniseries into human and organizational performance, where we've talked about, instead of just telling people what to do, we need to be asking them what they need. And we back that up with five real-world actions that I've either been a part of bringing to life in organizations I've worked for, or seen as a consultant or helped with as a consultant now at the Hop Nerd LLC. That's it. Next week, we're going to be talking about safety, not being the absence of negatives, but the presence of positives. And we will continue chug-a-lug-a-lugging right along until we get to the end of a lot of these key ideas, at least the main ones. And let me know what you think about it. TheHopNerd@gmail.com. If you'd like to schedule a chat and catch up on human and organizational performance stuff, or if you would like to chat about how I can help your organization begin or go farther on its human and organizational performance journey, or if you're starting this stuff, or even if you've been doing this stuff for a minute and you find yourself in the position that many folks find themselves in, going, hey, we've been talking about these principles a lot. Well, what do we do now? That's what I do. Down in the muck, down in the mud, down in the trench, down in a confined space, up on top of that thing. Yeah, crawling over there, up through the pipe rack. Me looking like a cresting whale, sticking my head up out of the pipe rack to catch a few breaths of cool air. Yeah. That's what I specialize in. You can learn more at thehopnerd.com, or you can book that initial consult and we can talk about it. It's all over on the website. You can explore some of the services, or if you're looking for your next keynote speaker, or maybe you want me to have Daryl the Safety Man. If you don't know Daryl, make sure you're following along on LinkedIn. Come and crash your next corporate gathering. All things are possible. Just check out thehopnerd.com or get in touch, thehopnerd@gmail.com. I'm going to end this one right where I started it. Thanks for being here. You know, it's all cliche and so I was going to say squeezy. Is squeezy, would that be the right thing to say here? It's all warm and fluffy, squeezy. It's definitely not cold and prickly, but it's cliche and maybe squeezy to keep saying this. But I mean it directly from the heart. You are the best part of getting to do these podcasts. Getting to hear how you put these ideas to work within your organizations, getting to hear your stories of leaving your work worlds better than you found them, getting to meet up with you to have coffee and eat barbecue when I'm in your neck of the woods. Man, thank you. Thank you for being here. Keep being the legends that you are, the rock stars that you are. Keep kicking ass and taking names out there and putting that positive dent in our world, because I'm here to tell you. It's working. Love you. Mean it. Bye, everybody. Bye. Thanks for listening, everybody. We greatly appreciate all of your support of the Hop Nerd Podcast and the Hop Nerd LLC. If you need a little bit of help of bringing human and organizational performance to life, if you would like to take your efforts around learning and improving to the next level, yep, I can help with that. Head over to www.thehopnerd.com or send me an email, thehopnerd@gmail.com. Until next time, bye, everybody. Bye. These conversations around work is done versus work is imagined, pain points, problems, even best practices, the good stuff, the great stuff. Well, Starting Points is exactly what you're looking for. Starting Points, the original operationally curious card deck, packed full of a ton of learning-focused, operationally curious icebreaker questions to get those conversations flowing, helping your organization to effectively learn, improve, and innovate. Head over to thehopnerd.com/SP to download our free sample deck, to purchase the original card decks and learning journals, or to inquire about licensing options so that you can customize Starting Points with your brand, your logo, and your questions for your specific organization's needs. Again, that's thehopnerd.com/SP. Back to the show.